Welcome to Rights Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr, author and publisher. Among my other books, I'm the author of Defend Your Condo and Homeowner Rights and publisher of the first Homeowner's Defense Kit. For books on home, health, and hearth, please visit my website at starpublications.com. That's star, S-T-A-R-R, publications with an S, .com. The Homeowner's Defense Kit trilogy, which includes my book, is the first link on the left, and we also offer homeowners health and empowerment counseling. Rights Radio features guests who can help you better understand your rights as a homeowner, pet owner, and consumer, including the right to long-lasting natural vitality for both you and your beloved pet. We've all experienced the anguish of watching a pet in distress and not knowing how best to help. Look for our ebook on supernatural vitality, how both you and your pet can escape the mad medicine bottle once and for all. I'm pleased to announce that Rights Radio has a new look, moving from a static website to a dynamic content management blog system. So don't forget to visit our new site at Rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, radio.com. Now you can comment on topics, programs, and other matters of interest. Our show today, how to stop the foreclosure process and how to obtain a new mortgage at the best possible price. Our guest is Jack DeBrawa, a straight-talking mortgage expert with 18 years of sales experience in the mortgage arena. He spent nearly 12 of those years with Washington Mutual. Now, you can reach Jack at 954-608-0887. That's 954-608-0887, and he'll be looking forward to hearing from you. Hello, Jack.
How are you, Dr. Joyce?
So nice to have you on the show.
It is my pleasure to be here with you.
Well, Jack, let's talk about the overall crisis that we're facing in the mortgage and foreclosure arena. How do we get into this situation?
Let me start first by saying that I am no longer with Washington Mutual, as Washington Mutual has closed all their mortgage offices, and I have moved to another large lending institution where I am a sales manager right now. And I've been in this business, as you said, for 18 years. Going back to your question, the whole mortgage mess actually started long time ago. In 1988, there was a couple of British gentlemen who invented something called structured investment vehicles, or SIVs. Basically, what it is an investment instrument that allows a bank to borrow money short-term and then reinvest that money long-term and make this profits on the spread of interest rates. It is obviously cheaper to borrow money for a short-term, and it has to be less than 9 months. That's the commercial paper they would be borrowing, and reinvesting it for something like mortgages, school loans, credit cards, and then paying those short-term loans with the long-term loans and just keep on doing it. It was invented for simple reason to make money. It wasn't really invented to create a vehicle for mortgage for banks to sell mortgages to, but that's what it became later on. And when we had the great boom of prices in 2000 and 1999 and on until 2005, basically the banks who had those SIVs needed the mortgages to keep paying or refinancing the short-term loans and continue on making money. So they basically went to a mortgage lenders like Washington Mutual, Countrywide, and Bank United, and all the smaller mortgage lenders, even though they're big, they're not as big as the banks up front. And they tell them, we'll buy your paper because we have a vehicle that can easily liquidate this paper. We have investors who are buying those securities, and everybody's happy and everybody's making money, so get us the mortgages. And like I often say, it's comparable to somebody who would go to a factory and say, we're going to buy all the XXX black T-shirts you make. You would be making all the XXX black T-shirts that you can put your hands on and selling it, and that's what happened. So the banks were selling mortgages, and since these people up in Wall Street were buying any paper that you could give to them, that's what they were getting. They were getting mortgages with no income verification, no asset verification, 100 and 125% loan-to-value mortgages. And it was all hunky-dory. Everybody was happy because everybody was making money. The problem started when somebody finally figured out that this is not really that hunky-dory, because all those underlying securities have to have value that is at least steady. And when the values of the properties started dropping, because they got exorbitantly expensive, all those securities that were backing those SIVs suddenly were worth less money than the money that was invested in there, and basically they started to be worthless. And that created a crisis. So the banks stopped lending money because now they don't have anywhere to sell the money. There is no commercial paper to fund those securities. And we're in a situation we're in right now.
This is very interesting because I don't think that the typical consumer really has a sense of where it all began. And basically, it was making the people on Wall Street very, very rich, much richer than the people who are buying and flipping homes, I take it.
Absolutely. The banks that were, and by the way, Citibank started it, and they're not the only guilty party. All the big banks did it, Goldman Sachs and everybody else, and a lot of European banks, Deutsche Bank. And what happened is they were not only making money on a spread because they were leaving a portion of that spread to themselves, they were also making money on servicing those structured investment vehicles because they were not really holding it on their books because there was no really credit risk to them. So it was kind of off-the-books financing, kind of Enron thing, you know, accounting, not financing, I mean. Not really that clear. Now, a lot of them have to take those loans back on their books, and now they have to write off all those billions of dollars that we see on TV every day that Citibank or whoever else is writing off because the government, not government, but the investors make them take it back on their books, and that's what's going on.
Where was the government in all of this? Why weren't they there, you know, watching over what was going on, stopping them, stopping the speculation?
Well, I don't really think that it's government's position to get involved in banks creating an investment vehicle. And you know, since banks weren't really asking government for any financial help, it wasn't really they weren't really involved in it at no point until the crisis started, when the government suddenly has to get involved because there is no commercial paper being sold. And government right now, what they're doing is they're buying those mortgage-backed securities with a promise from those banks that they're going to rebuy them somewhere in advance in future when everything is going to be back and nice again, which nobody really believes in. And they're basically lending the money based on the junk they're buying. They're giving money back to the banks because otherwise the economy would freeze.
Where is the end game in all of this? When, I mean, it's obviously been crashing, but there must be a point where it stops crashing and turns itself around. How does it turn it around when it's all built on sand?
It's a, you know, I wouldn't really call this being built on sin. It was a very nice vehicle that worked for a long time, and if you have a stable market, everything works, but when the market turns around and the people start losing money, obviously happens what happened right now, and that's why we're in a situation we're in right now. It's because of the prices of the properties dropping. When will it end? When the prices will stabilize. Now, obviously, this is the problem with this is that the credit crunch makes the prices go down, and the prices going down make the credit crunch. It's two things that are fueling each other right now, and I don't really have an answer of how to stop it. Somewhere, there is people waiting with a lot of money who are going to decide that the market has dropped low enough for them to come back into the market and start buying properties. And at that point, the market will turn around.
But will the same instruments be in play, or will they have learned their lesson and go on to new instruments, hopefully more stable?
Talking as a banker, I mean, if there is money to be made, bankers will invent an instrument that will finance those things. And it's not a bad thing, because we need some kind of an instrument to finance mortgages. Right now, we don't have any, and it's very hard to obtain a mortgage. It's very hard for somebody to just walk into the bank and say, I want to buy the property. I have 20% down payment. It's an investment property. Most of the banks will tell you, I'm sorry, we need 25 or 30% down payment right now. Because we worry about the risk of the market dropping, and that's the problem. So we do need some kind of an instrument, not the instrument that obviously didn't work. It worked for a long time, since 1988. That's 30 years, right? 20 years? 20 years. But it stopped working now. Going back to when will it end? It will end when the when people will come in with cash to buy properties. When they start buying again, everything will be nice, and everybody and the banks will turn around too, because then they will know that the property values are not falling anymore, so it's less risk for them to extend credit to your borrowers.
And at some point that will happen.
It's at some point that will happen. Unfortunately, it's not here yet. We are in a very deep crisis. I just read somewhere that there was, let me just look at a number, so I will quote it, 28,500 properties foreclosed in May in this country. That's
and
like 2,700
a day. 2,700 a day, okay.
In May, I mean, it, on an average, someone told me it's 2,100, but in May it was more than that. So, I mean, we are in a deep crisis. That's a lot of people losing homes.
I want to go into the foreclosure crisis, but before we do, since we promised our listeners some good advice, when they're now looking for a mortgage, what would you tell them that they should be very aware of, and what should they do?
There are still banks that lend money. It's not that it's frozen and there is no money. Obviously, your credit standards are much higher right now than they were a year or 2 years or even 6 months ago. Banks are looking at a very good borrower. They want to see their income. They want to see their potential of paying off this loan. And they want to see a very nice credit rating. They don't want to lend money to people anymore who don't have a 600 or 620 credit score. So if you do have a bad credit score, you're out of luck. It's
at
very hard to borrow money.
At least 600?
600 is a very low credit score right now for a bank.
Okay.
If 600 credit score will require you to provide 2 years of income documentation and everything else. And in Florida, it's not that easy to, you know, you would have to make a lot of money to buy a $600,000 condominium, proving every penny that you're making. That's a problem in Florida. It's not a problem in Texas or somewhere else where the properties are not as expensive. Or Florida or California, that's a problem.
You have to show all of your income over a couple of years?
All of your income, all of your assets. The probability of future employment, if you're going to be employed, and you know, the bank is going to call the employer and see how you're doing, if they're not looking to get rid of you. And if you're still going to be employed, if there's a big possibility that you're still going to be employed 12 and 24 months from now, et cetera, which is not bad, because that's how banking's supposed to work. If we're lending money to somebody, we need to know that we're going to get paid back. Because of the craziness that happened a couple of years ago, it all went out the window, and you would walk into the bank without credit, without income, without, as long as you had a pulse, you would get a loan.
But in addition to all of that good credit, I mean, apparently those who really need it badly and are terribly worried, they're not in that category. They might have problems of one kind or another. What would you recommend for that?
Well, I mean, if somebody is going to buy a property right now, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Or refinance.
Well, if you have bad credit, I wouldn't be looking to purchase a property right now,
mm-hmm.
unless you can come up with very substantial down payment and then find a lender that is willing to risk it, because there is very few of them out right now who are willing to take a risk on a person with bad credit. Remember, the lenders do have the market risk involved here, and they know they're lending in a falling market, so they're expecting the property value to drop. So even with your 20% down payment, they're expecting the properties to be worth less than that in a year.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they're savvy people, bankers, usually they are, with their money.
Mm-hmm.
So they are looking at other issues, and it's credit, and it's money that you have saved, and they want to see that you're going to be able to pay off your mortgage or to keep paying your mortgage. So if you have bad credit, I wouldn't recommend right now looking for a purchase a property.
But we see many advertisements saying, now is the time. You can purchase a property for almost nothing because they're, you know, obviously trying to sell them. They're in foreclosure and encouraging people to get into the property game. They were doing that right along, but they're doing it again and even more loudly, you might say. What would you recommend to that person who signs up for that, you know, that $600 or $1,000 course, how you can make a million in real estate, being encouraged to buy up these properties? Now you're telling him if he doesn't have great credit, you might as well not take the course.
Well, unless he's very liquid and has a couple of $1 million in a bank and can do this cash, then he has no issues.
Mm-hmm.
And taking a course like this to teach him how to buy and flip properties, great thing. Why not?
If he has the money.
If he has the money, obviously. Always in the market, in a falling market, people who are very liquid are making a lot of money.
But those people are not usually liquid. They're being told they could still buy it with a small amount of money down.
Not really. I mean, there might be some vehicles that I'm not aware of, even though I've been in this business for a long time. But right now, to buy an investment property, to hold it, first of all, why would you do it if you know the market is still falling? It's not a great time to start investing in properties. It's time to defend your primary residence and maybe a vacation home that you have. Investing, I would still give it a few months before, I would actually wait for the prices to stabilize before I would go and do something like this. And the prices are far from stabilizing yet. To give you an example, in Miami market, we have year over year a 35% drop in prices. Why would you want to invest in it right now? Same thing in California. Most of the markets in California look just as bad, actually even worse. So it may not be a good time for somebody to go and purchase a home right now as an investment, or go to spend $1,000 to listen to somebody telling him that you're going to make millions of dollars by buying properties without credit and without any down payments, which was possible a couple of years ago, but it's not there anymore.
Could you repeat what you said, a 35% drop year after year?
Year over year.
Let me
look at the numbers, so I'm not going to.
Uh-huh.
West Palm Beach, 32%. This is at the end of May, and this is over 1 year. Cape Coral, Florida, 35%. Miami wasn't that bad, I think. Miami was 28%. California is Sacramento, 35%. We have Riverside, 29%. San Diego, 26%. Modesto, 37%. Stockton, 39%. I mean, huge numbers. Huge numbers. And those prices, you know, they're falling. They're still not there. People are still, there is a lot of people sitting on a fence right now waiting for the prices to stabilize. There is a lot of money sitting on a fence. And they will come in and start buying, and then is a time when everybody who is looking to purchase an investment property should start buying. Wait for the big boys to come in with big money before you invest your $100,000 that you've been saving all your life to do something like this.
What's the sure sign that the big boys are coming in? How do you know?
When you look at the listings and you see that the listings are disappearing, that means that people are buying. Right now you're looking at the listings and I just read somewhere that we have an 11-month, we have enough properties on the market right now for them to be sold out, it would take 11 months. And that's on an average in all the whole of the United States. And in Florida, I know it's like 36 months. So an inventory of properties, unsold properties, is 3 years in Florida, in South Florida, and which is, you know, awful. And now you start looking at MLS and you see that instead of 27 properties daily, you have 270 properties daily being sold, and those numbers are just off the top. I have no idea what they are for real. I'm just giving an example. Then you know that something is happening and people are coming in. And even if the cheapest properties are being sold, but they're actually moving, that's the time to start thinking about investing. Not yet.
All right. This is very good advice, because I think what you're suggesting is people could get hit in round, what might be round three. A triple bottom, so to speak.
So to speak, yes.
Yeah. Let's talk about the foreclosure rate. It's just staggering. And I'd like you to explain why. Why are homes falling into foreclosure? Why can't the owner and the banks do more to save them? What's going on?
Let me start from the end. The banks are trying. It's in their best interest to try not to do foreclosures. So the banks are trying, and I'll go a little deeper into this in a moment, and to tell people why and how should they talk to the banks and what happens and how the banks are going about fixing the loan or saving people from foreclosures, because they are. Why are we going into foreclosures? First of all, there was a lot of investors who just walked away from properties when the value dropped, and they don't care. They lost their credit rating, but it's just money, and they wouldn't recoup the money for another few years anyway, so they don't care. Second of all, there is a lot of people who lost their jobs. There is a lot of jobs connected to real estate business, mortgage business, fixing houses. A few days ago, I spoke to somebody about it, to an attorney, who told me that the unemployment rates have risen tremendously in places where the bubble is the biggest. So the unemployment rate in Miami is highest in like 15 years. same thing in the other places in California and Nevada, because people are losing jobs and the foreclosures, same thing happens. So that's what happens. A lot of people are walking away from properties, even if they're their primary homes, just because they're looking at the value of the property and they're saying, I bought it for $400, it's $280 right now. Why am I going to keep paying that $400,000 mortgage if I'm never going to recoup this money, or it's going to take forever to recoup that money? Let's just forget this and rent the place. And they do that. And a lot of people are just walking away from properties. And all those things combined, and the hardship on the $4 gas and the food being as expensive as it is right now, people just have less money, and a lot of them just don't have enough money to keep up with the mortgage payments. The taxes on property taxes in Florida, as you know, I don't know about California, but Florida is crazy. People just don't want to do this. I have a property, and my taxes on my property are $20,000 a month, a year. I mean, $20,000 in property taxes. That's crazy.
Well, it certainly is. But when these people walk away, I think I've always been wondering about this. What do they do? Because now their credit rating is shot, so they won't be able to buy another home. Are they going to be renters for life?
Well, they're not going to be able to buy another home for a certain time, maybe 3, maybe 5 years, maybe 7 years, depending of how hard they're going to work on their credit rating. However, we're talking about people who can't afford those homes either way. So, you know, that they don't really have another way of doing anything. I mean, banks, as I said, are trying to fix some of the loans, and they speak to people, and if the people call them, but remember, a lot of people just stop calling the banks. They don't want to answer any calls. They don't want to open the letters because they know they're in trouble, and that is a huge problem. Even when a bank is trying to do something, and I'm not taking bank side over here, I'm just saying how it is. Even when a bank would be willing to do something for that person, they can't contact them because nobody's calling and nobody's answering the mail. So that's what happens, and the foreclosure starts.
Oh, what happens, but overall, I think this is, it kind of hits you at the heart level. People feel that their home is their heart and their hearts, and to own your own home was the American dream. And now, are we going to be moving back to Renterville? Is it going to be the new way of life for those who've lost their home?
Well, we're still talking about 7 to 10% of families only in America. I mean, it's
okay.
A huge number, but it's not a 50% crisis or anything.
7 to 10%.
I believe it's at 7% something. I don't want to quote a number because I don't have it in front of me. But I'm talking about people who are 60 days late or more. So it is a big number, but it's not something that would change the American dream. However, there might be no other way for them. I mean, just moving away from a home that you can't afford is better than not to have enough money to buy your child food next month or next week or something. It's an asset, and people have to understand that. If they can't afford it anymore, they just can't afford it. I remember, Joyce, I'm sorry, I remember we were speaking a few days ago about this exorbitant prices, and everybody is saying that why would people buy those homes if they couldn't afford them in the first place, and now they're in trouble, now they're in crisis, and it's a situation that all the poor taxpayers have to pay for, and it's not really their fault. And as I explained to you then, the situation was 3-4 years in Florida, as you know, if you wanted to buy a two-bedroom apartment, it was either $400,000 or you wouldn't get one. So there wasn't really anything else to purchase. You couldn't buy a $100,000 apartment because it didn't exist unless you moved to Alabama, and not everybody was willing to move to Alabama. So these people are not bad people. They were over their head then. They were given a mortgage by the bank or a mortgage broker that allowed them to pay a very low interest rate for a certain period of time. Now those rates are coming due, and they're higher right now, and the teaser rates are over, and they can't afford the homes.
I see the depth of it, but what you're saying is it may not be overall as catastrophic as it looks in the newspaper.
It is for the individual, though. It is for the individual,
and
you know, even 10% of families is a whole lot of people who are not going to be able to afford their homes, and that's a very bad thing. It's a huge crisis. Okay. I think it is the biggest real estate crisis in the history of this country.
So how do you balance off the fact that 7 to 10% is not the nation, but it's the biggest? Where's the dimension there?
Well, from what I read, the biggest so far, there was a crisis that was in Texas mostly, and it was 25% drop in prices of real estate. It was in the beginning of 1990s, end of 1980s. And right now we're talking 35, 40, 45, maybe 50% drop in prices. So it's a much bigger and much more, much larger crisis, not because it's not just Texas, it's the whole America. California had a crisis in the beginning of 1990s, but it wasn't as huge as this either, and it took California 5 years, 6 years to recover.
Mm.
So that's what we're looking at.
Well, what if you are in foreclosure or you have a lien placed on your home? What are some of the steps that you can take? Because you've indicated that actually the banks would like to work with you. Or that's your impression.
Well, it's not an impression. It's my, I know that the banks do try to work with you, and there is a trick to it. It's not really a trick. But there is a way that you should approach this thing. First of all, you need to call the bank. Don't be scared of calling a bank and telling them, listen, I can't afford it. The 2000 mortgage payment amount, it was fine 2 years ago. Right now it's over my head, and I'm going to lose the property. What can you do for me? And the banks will try to do something. They will ask for your financial statements. They will ask what your expenditures are like, how much you're paying for your cars. They may tell you, listen, you have to get rid of that $600 lease payment, and then we're going to work out something for you. And then they will kind of try to restructure your monthly expenses, your budget. So if they come halfway, you'll come halfway, and maybe they'll work out a way that you can keep the house. And that's how it works. What banks are trying to do, first of all, is to kind of get your payments on a schedule that is going to lower your payment amount, but it's not really going to lower your principal amount, if you know what I'm saying. So instead of a 30-year loan, they're going to try to make it a 40-year loan.
40 years?
Of course. Which will make your payment $100 less, let's say, and that may help you.
I never heard of a 40-year loan.
There are even 50-year loans. I don't know if they're still out there, but they were 50-year loans a couple of years ago.
Huh.
They can also do, let's say you have a teaser rate of 6% or 5% that was good for 3 years, and now it comes time where the rate becomes a real interest rate and it's going to be 7.7. They can refreeze that rate for another 3, maybe 5 years to give you a chance to keep up with those payments. It's better for a bank to do this than go into foreclosure. You have to remember that foreclosure costs the bank about $50,000 each time they do it. That's a lot of money. So basically the trick to the whole thing is if restructuring your loan costs them less than the foreclosure, it's a good deal for the bank. And they may do it. They probably will do it if there is a savvy banker that you're speaking to. Not everybody is, but some of them, and a lot of them are, especially now. There's special workout departments with people who are doing just that in the banks. Now, also the $50,000 doesn't take into effect the prices that are dropping. So if you're in a market where it's very hard for a bank to resell the property, they may be even more flexible than your $50,000. There may be $100,000 flexible. There may be a situation where you come to the bank and you tell them, listen, there is a first and a second on my property. The first is $200, the second is $80. I can afford the first, I can't afford the second. And they will waive the second. A very large bank in Florida just came out publicly today and announced that they will do that for people.
What if you don't have a second?
Some banks, there is something called a short refinance, which allows a bank to lower the principal, or they do lower the principal, to make you stay in the house. And it's the same principle. If you're in a market where it's very hard for a bank to sell the property and they know they're going to lose more money by foreclosing on it, let's say you own a $200 and they say $160 will make you, the payment on $160 will make you whole again and you can keep the property, they may do it. They actually do it.
The bank that announced that, what bank was it?
The bank that announced that in Florida was, I don't know if I can say a name actually, so I don't want to go on record by saying a name, but if somebody wants to do their research, it's a Florida bank. They can get on the internet. The president of the bank said something, but I don't know if it's already officially out, and I don't want to.
Correct.
But it is a local Florida bank, so it wouldn't affect anybody in California or anything.
But when we talked yesterday, in fact, we were talking about short selling and short refinance.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring insights to the table about both that I think are extremely important for anyone who's listening to this show. And I'd like you to take a moment to go into greater depth if you could.
There are several ways to avoid a foreclosure if you're already in a really bad situation, dire situation, where you know you can no longer afford a home. First of all, you can call the bank and say, listen, I'm moving out. T- take my deed. I don't want to go through the foreclosure process. Here's the keys to the home. It's yours. They don't have to do it, by the way, because they're giving up on certain rights so that, like, they can't recover any other liens on the property and stuff like this when they do this. But in today's situation, in today's market, they'd rather do that than spend the money for foreclosure. So that's one way of doing it. It's not a great way, but you're losing the house anyway. This way you don't get the phone calls at every time, you know, at 6 a.m. on Sunday saying, where is my money?
But just to interrupt you for a moment on that, can the bank say, no, I'm sorry, we're going to sue you, or can they take action against you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You signed the mortgage note, you said, I'm borrowed this amount of money and I'm going to repay it in 30 years' time by making monthly payment of such and such. If you don't do it, the bank has a right to put it to foreclose or accelerate the loan and sue you for it, absolutely. They don't have to take your deed in lieu of foreclosure. They usually do, but they don't have to. And they will, by the way, ask you for your financial situation, for a letter of explanation why you have to do this, so they can back their books when somebody asks them, why didn't you foreclose on this property, why did you just give it away, et cetera, et cetera.
But can they come back? For example, perhaps they don't answer you immediately. These things are in slow motion. So here comes a couple. They go to the bank. They hand over the keys. They say, we want to be done with this. We're leaving. And nothing happens for 6 months, not even for a year. And then suddenly a year or two later, they get a letter from an attorney saying, we're suing you. Can it happen?
Yes, it can, and this is not how it's supposed to be. Now, first of all, I need to disclose that I'm not an attorney and I don't want to be one. I'm going to
right.
be in hell anyway, probably, but not with attorneys. Nothing to do with attorneys. I'm not a lawyer, so whatever I'm saying about it is just my knowledge because of the experience I have in a business, but I'm not stating something because I know the law. However, you cannot just walk into the bank with a keys and a deed and say, thank you very much, keep it, I'm leaving, I'm going back to Alabama. And I don't know, I like Alabama, I don't know why I'm using Alabama as an example. Just because it's close to Florida. What you have to do is actually call the workout department of the bank and tell them this is the situation and I'm going to do this. Will you allow me to do that? And then they will tell you if they will or not, and they will ask you for your financial statements and a letter of explanation. And the process is probably 30-60-day process, and then you send them the deed, and that's it, if they agree to it. If they don't agree to it, unfortunately, you have to go through foreclosure.
But you have to get a letter from them. You must have a letter from them saying they've accepted it.
Absolutely.
Anything short of that.
Absolutely. Just walking into the branch and dumping your keys on a teller's desk is not going to do that. No.
Okay. And now to the next step.
Well, if you're in the same situation, however, you know that there is somebody interested in your property and he will be willing to buy the property, but because of the prices that have dropped so much, you actually owe more on the property than the value of the property. There is something called short sale. And the process is very similar. You call the bank and you tell them, I have a buyer of my property. I can't afford to keep the property anymore. I'm going to lose it anyway. I have a $300,000 mortgage on a property. He's offering me $250,000, for example. Can I sell it to this buyer? The bank will ask you for your financial records again. They will ask you for a letter of explanation why you can't do this, why you can't keep up with the property, why you're going back on your promise. You promised to pay this loan, and now you don't want to anymore. And you have to send them the contract signed by the seller, by the buyer, potential buyer, stating that he's willing to pay the $250,000. The property needs to be listed. It had to be listed for a certain period of time, and it depends on the bank. Some banks require 15 days. Some banks require 90 days for the property to be listed prior to that short sale contract. The listing has to also have words short sale, so the buyers know that they're buying a short sale. It's not up to you. It's up to the bank for the sale actually to happen. You don't have a right to just sell the property outright because you owe more than you're selling it for. So the bank has to agree to the sale. And after that process, which usually, again, takes 30, 60, sometimes 90 days, the bank will say yes or no. And they will say, yes, you can sell it. The buyer buys the property. You're out of it. Thank you very much. If they say no, we're going through foreclosure.
How many people are doing this? Is this a big movement, or is this just a small, you know, maybe dozens of people in each state?
It's a pretty big situation. There is attorney companies that specialize in it right now. There is a very big one in California. I don't remember the name, but I know I've been contacted by them. And you know, I'm in Aventura in Florida, which is a pretty big condominium hub over here. And I have a lot of clients walking in daily asking me, what do we do? We're in a situation when we're upside down right now. We bought the property 18 months ago, and we paid this much, and now we owe more than we paid. And what do we do? More than, I'm sorry, we owe more than the property is worth. What do we do? And that's where I try to tell them, you need to try this and this and that. And a short sale is one of the ways of doing it.
I just want to interrupt you for a moment to reiterate that you are in Aventura, Florida, but you are a national expert, and so people can call you whether they live in California or Florida, but you are based in Aventura, Florida.
Yes, I am, and my lovely bank, who still does mortgages, lends all over the United States.
Okay. Moving forward on that issue, I didn't want to stop, but I want people to know where you were.
Thank you very much.
Going back to short selling and short refinance, is this something that a person, I mean, of course, neither of us are attorneys, we're not giving legal advice, but is it something that should require the services of an attorney? If they want to go down this road, do they need an attorney?
Up to the borrower, I would say, do they need an attorney? Not necessarily. They would need a very experienced realtor who knows how to do those things, and he's been doing it for a while, who knows the difference between a short sale and a regular sale, at least, and who knows the documents. You need help of somebody if you're not savvy in the mortgage business, who will help you fill up the documentation that the bank will send you, because there's a package that you will receive of, you know, 60 pages, asking you all kinds of questions. It would be helpful if someone helps you with it. I know the attorneys in California, and I'm not trying to take somebody because I don't know their names, I don't remember their names, but they're splitting the commission with the realtor, because the realtor still gets a commission from the bank. So it's not really cost out of your pocket. So if you look at their internet and you find somebody who will do it that way, it's not really costing you any money, and it's always helpful to have somebody who knows the law, unlike me, who can help you with doing those things and filling it right and walks you through the whole process, because they've done it so many times and you're only going to do it once, hopefully.
Even if you're short selling, the realtor is making money?
Yes. Remember, the realtor is still the one who is providing you with a buyer.
Mm-hmm.
So he deserves a commission. There's a cap.
Correct.
On commission. I believe it's only 2%, and they won't pay two realtors, just one realtor. If there's two realtors, they're splitting it 1% each.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a huge amount of money, and it is bank who is paying it, not you.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically what you're doing, you're walking away from the property and you're providing bank with a venue to sell this property right away without going through a foreclosure process, relisting it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if there is a $50,000 difference and they know it's going to cost them more than that to do it, they'll take that, they'll do it.
Now what happens if you live in a condo or an HOA, as so many of our readers do, and your condo attempts first a lien and then a foreclosure? How does that work, and what can you do to avoid it or stop it?
After we spoke about this yesterday and you asked me that question, I did some research on it and called my friends attorneys who know way more about this than I do, and it's a huge subject, and it's a very complicated situation that I weren't really aware of, and so I'm going to try to walk into this slowly so we can all understand what I'm talking about. And then please stop me if I lose you somewhere, because I'm lost in it as well. First of all, I can only talk about Florida, because Florida I know, and other states may have different rules and regulations about condominium associations and what their empowerments and rights are. But in Florida, and I believe in California as well, you can foreclose on put a lien on a property for not paying your maintenance or not paying your anything else that the condominium asks you to pay. Like special assessments, and then you can foreclose on that lien. In Florida, the situation gets tricky, because there is a statute that says that the condominium will only recoup 6 months of the association's fees if the bank forecloses. What will happen is, once condominium starts foreclosure, usually the borrower isn't there already, and it's late on a mortgage anyway, the bank will immediately foreclose anyway. And a mortgage takes precedence over maintenance fees anyway. So first of all, the mortgage gets paid. And then the bank has to make good on the maintenance that is behind, but only up to 6 months. There is a statute somewhere on the books that I was told by the attorneys that takes the banks, they say you have to keep on paying the maintenance, but whatever is behind, you're only liable for up to 6 months. Now, it gets tricky when it comes to special assessment, because different states have different rules on it, and I actually didn't find out exactly how much the bank has to pay in a special assessment when they foreclose the property. Because remember, whatever happens, whether it's condominium or a mechanic can foreclose, somebody who puts a lien on your home because they did your windows and you didn't pay them, it's still a bank that will eventually be the one foreclosing it, because they're the ones that hold the first mortgage and they have to get paid first in front of everybody else. So the bank really will be making good on all the other stuff. So the bank is the one writing a check to the condominium association for a special assessment or the 6 months of maintenance that we were just discussing. So it's the bank who is getting stuck holding the bag. And it's not really clear. I couldn't find a clear answer. I will do some more research on it, of how much of a special assessment is the bank liable and how much do they have to pay, whether it's the whole thing or not. I believe it's the whole thing. There is no cap like on a mortgage, like on a maintenance payment, because if the special assessment is to replace balconies that are falling, you have to do it. There is no way the bank has to pay. So I believe, but I didn't find a clear answer. I put some calls to my upper management in the bank, but I didn't get anybody to respond to me, anybody who knows anyway, to tell me for sure, and I don't want to put any wrong impression on the air.
But you're raising some very important, and you're providing some very important information here. I'd say very important.
Well, I hope so.
If it's unknown to so many people, even in the industry, imagine the person who's serving on a condo board or who's the victim of a board that wants to push you out.
Well, thank you very much, first of all, for telling me that I am providing. I hope to provide as much information as we can about this. You know, there is some ways that the person who is getting that letter stating you can't pay your special assessment and the 3 months is up or whatever the term was, we're going to put a lien on property. There is a way to defend this. First of all, they can try to write a letter to the board saying, I just can't afford it, and maybe we can do it over 12 months or something like this. Going back a little bit here, the problem with that is that there is no bank right now that I know of that would lend money to the condominium on a special assessment, at least in Florida. There was a great bank called Mellon Bank that used to specialize in it. Most of the condos over here, you would get a special assessment. It would be financed over 3 or 5 years, and it would be a hit of $50 to your monthly maintenance instead of $12,000. Do you follow what I'm saying? Right now, they don't do it anymore because they're not sure if they're going to get paid back, because there are so many foreclosures that a lot of condominiums are going bankrupt. The condo associations are going bankrupt because they don't have enough money to upkeep the property, because third of the people or half of the people or 10% or 20% of the people left, and they don't have the money from them anymore. So going forward with this, if you're the person who is being pursued by the condominium to pay your special assessment and you don't have the money, first of all, you can legally ask for the documents, why is the special assessment, et cetera, et cetera. They should give you some time on it, and it all, again, depends on the state or even a city where this thing is happening. You can also try to change the board. You can get enough people in a condominium saying, you know what, I don't think we really need to change the shower curtains right now in the swimming pool, because we have enough problems. Let's not do this right now. These four people on the board really don't know what they're doing. Let's vote them out. That's always a way to do. I mean, that's always one way of going about it. It's not simple or easy, but it's another way of going about it. But if it's something like you know, 20% of the condominium people disappeared and the properties are foreclosed and we don't have enough money to pay for electricity bill next month, you know, it's very hard not to, you have to pay the money. I mean, the condominium ceases to exist otherwise. There is no electricity, elevators don't work, you know, it's a big deal. If you don't have enough money for upkeep, that's a problem. Now, if you feel that you're being ripped off by the condominium association, which in Florida we all know has happened before, I mean, call the police and see what's going on over there. There's people who specialize in stuff like this in police departments, especially in Miami Beach, who will look into this. And you know, you don't really need to repaint the building 2 years after it was repainted again just because somebody on the condominium association has a contractor who is his friend. And those things were happening in Florida. And if that's the situation, this is absolutely not what we're talking about.
The movement toward having police involvement is thanks to Julio Rubino, State Representative Julio Rubino, who's been fierce about this and brought about this change, and he will be our guest on July 2nd, so we'll be very happy to talk to him about this new development in Florida. But as you say, it's very unusual because I'm speaking to a group of people in another state. I won't mention it and I won't give out too many details, but they are senior citizens and they're being pushed out by an assessment that they've been given 90 days to pay. A huge assessment, of course they were on fixed incomes and they couldn't afford to pay. So many of them are going to lose their homes. Now, what do they do in a situation like that?
It's a tragedy. You know, I don't think it would happen over here for simple reason that condominium association, if they were going to do this just to get rid of people so they can resell the properties, would be losing money today because the properties are not valued at what they used to be. If this is in a state where property values were still up and they're just trying to push the people to do whatever to change the condominium association rules or whatever, that's a different ballgame. But in Florida, that would not happen because they would be losing money. So I don't see this happening in here, and I can't speak for other places that I don't really know the rules and regulations over there. But I would think that if you sign a, you know, as we spoke earlier, a condominium papers, condo docs specify how much, not how much assessments can be lien against you, but if there is an assessment, how long of a time do you have to pay it, and et cetera, et cetera. And if you did sign it and you didn't read it, you know, it's a bad thing, especially if it's a senior citizen who probably wouldn't go through 160 pages of small print. I understand that. But, you know, contact an attorney. What can I tell you?
Right. Well, fortunately, we have a book as part of one of our publications about creating and modifying and understanding your condominium documents by Dr. David Goldenberg. And while it's not a whodunit and not an easy read, it's so important because you can look at that book and you can understand what good documents should look like, and you can compare it to the ones you have, and it also gives you an easy way to understand how to go through your documents. So I'm proud that we have that, and just to mention that it's being adopted by a developer on the West Coast for all of his homeowner association members, his new homes. So we're happy about that.
That's fantastic, and it's definitely easier to read a book than go through several hundred pages of And the book will tell you where to look for what you're looking for in the condominium documentation. That's a great thing, especially for a senior citizen.
I think so, because people look at it and it's such a, as you say, so complicated, so complex, but he's made it simpler to understand. We also have a downloadable report on understanding your documents. So we're trying to help people realize, and I want to emphasize and underscore what you said, you have to know your documents, because that's where they can get you down the road when you least expect it.
You're absolutely right. Read the small print. That's the most important print in the document, is the smallest one over there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you should look into for anything that can happen to you or down the road.
Now, as a final issue, we have about 5 or 6 minutes left.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yes, it does. And we're having a great conversation here. But what type of wisdom would you offer our listeners if they're in a condo, whether in a condo or a home or a homeowners association? How should they start to think and structure their approach going forward? What's a new way to deal with mortgages and foreclosures?
Well, I hope nobody who's listening to us is going through a foreclosure, but if they are, they should call their bank. It is very important to keep the communications open. And you know, I'm sorry to say, there are banks out there that you will never find the right person to talk to, and they just really don't know what they're doing. It's going to hurt them in a long time, the banks, I mean, because instead of helping people and helping themselves, they're just acting like, you know, it's the 800-pound gorilla that nobody's noticing in a room. And we don't really, they're acting like the borrowers, because they don't really want to hear from a borrower telling them what the problem is, and they're not really trying to resolve the problem. Even though, if you look through their monthly reports, every single big bank is saying now how great and how they're working with the borrower and they're trying to fix things. Some of the banks, and I hate to mention the name, one of them ends with Mutual, they're just very bad about it. That's one thing. Second thing is there is a big government push to try to at least ease the pain a little. And maybe there's going to be something coming up very soon that'll help the banks write off more money so they can forgive more debt to the borrowers, which would help a lot of people. Other than that, just you know, call the banks and tell them, I need to restructure the mortgage, I need to do something because I need to keep the property, and the way it is right now, I cannot do it. Condominium associations, I hope you're in the right place and everybody is working for you because everybody owns the building and everybody owns the condominium, but if you're in the wrong place, change the association and read up on it. As you said, there's books about it. And because they need to be run by right people, especially now in a situation where prices are falling, people are moving out, and condominiums are struggling, and I know they're struggling. They don't have enough money to keep up the condos month to month. They need to have right people running it. There's got to be somebody in association with some financial background. If it's just a guy that everybody likes because he plays great bridge, that's not going to do it.
And also homeowners associations.
Exactly.
Probably more homeowners associations in America than condo associations. And
you know, I just read up that there is 60 million people in America living in some kind of either condominium or homeowner association.
That's right.
That's a huge amount of people. And you know, we still didn't learn how to deal with this, and there's still issues, and you see it on TV and read it in the paper every day that there is issues with condo associations. I really can't answer the question, why is this happening, and or what to do forward, but I would like to see, I mean, you can't make a rule telling them if you have a condominium association or homeowners association that somebody has to have financial background or some kind of a business background, but it would help if that would be the people who try to run this condominium.
Yes, but unfortunately, those who have that type of background are usually so busy earning a living that they don't want to be involved in their condo association. And it's typically, in fact, a member of our board, his great claim to experience is that he was a pool guard most of his life.
Oh, well.
Yes, and he is a member of the board. He was duly elected. He doesn't have any financial background or experience. Might be a very nice person or not, doesn't really matter, but that's the background, and people will elect members of the board based on, as you said, whether they like you or not.
That's the thing, of course, and unfortunately we elect a lot of politicians that way too, but I don't want to go into politics.
No. But a last item here, and we have just a few minutes, and I think we can go into it shortly, and that is, when you go to refinance your mortgage in order to bring it down, let's say you're not worried about foreclosure, but you are having a hard time paying your bills, you want to bring down the rate. The rate has gone down since you negotiated it. Well, I know that the banks are not making it easy. They're making it very difficult. In other words, instead of trying to help people save money, they're putting up walls where they should not put up any walls.
As we just discussed, there are certain banks that just don't do the right thing. But there is a lot of banks there's not a lot of banks left, period, in the mortgage business. So I can't say a lot. I think there are 7 big mortgage players left. But let's say there is some banks that still do. Luckily, I work for one. I can't mention the name, but you do have my phone number. And it's on your website, so anybody can call me. And we do great refinances. And if you happen to have a loan already, and we can refinance your loan without even sending an appraiser to your property, because we're saying if we already appraised this property once and you already own that money, what's the difference right now if it's going to be $20,000 less? You owe the money anyway. You know what I'm saying? And we're going to try to make you survive it because we're going to lower your payment. It's in our best interest to do it, and we'll do that. So don't try to contact your banker or try to contact me if you want to, and I can help you with that. On a purchase, the same thing. Even investment purchases, there's still money. There's still ways of buy things. And if you call the right bank or call the right banker, you will find a way to do it, and you find a way to lower your mortgage payments. Not for everyone. I'm not saying everybody is the person who will be able to do it. Not anymore. It's, you need a little more than a pulse and a breath to do that. But we can still do it, and there is still a lot of ways to help people lower their monthly payments. And they should, especially if they have 7, 8% interest rate, they definitely should look into lowering their interest rate and refinancing a loan. Or even getting it in the longer term, like we discussed earlier, so they can lower their monthly payment. There are still a lot of ways to do that.
Well, I want to encourage anybody who's listening or will be listening or who visits our website, and they'll see the initial announcement of this call and also the summary of it, to call you at 954-608-0887, and that's Jack Dubrawa. And if they don't live in Florida, they should still call you because you have friends around the nation and you are part of a nationwide bank and mortgage lender. So, and beyond that, you're just a dynamic, wonderful guy, so they should call you and talk to you.
Thank you for a compliment and thank you for a plug.
No, it's a delight to have you on our show. And we're now running out of time here. They're going to come back in and cut in on us, but I wanted to take this moment to thank you again, Jack, for appearing on Rights Radio, helping us better understand this problem. And you're going to be with us again in the future. And you are now a member of our Brain Trust, so you can't run away from us.
Dr. Joyce, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure speaking to you. Hopefully we put some light on the very dark mortgage situation right now, and people will be able to do something with their situation.
I surely hope so. And this is Dr. Joyce Starr with Rights Radio and Starr, S-T-A-R-R, publications.com. And please visit both Rights Radio and StarrPublications.com. Keep up with what we're doing. Join our list. Listen to our shows. And let's go forward in fighting for your rights. I thank you very much, Jack, and we'll be visiting with you again.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.